the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
It's a bit of a read, but we're going to read right through the whole chapter, page 39. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of the cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," they said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing. They took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites, and not lay our hands on him. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cisterns and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it's your son's robe." He recognized this and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Well, a long reading there, but I think it's good to read the whole lot, and I'll just highlight a few things from this evening. But just to rewind a little bit over the past few months, I think since January, actually, we've been looking at this story of God's unfolding plan of redemption for the world, and we've seen that in the life of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Way back in Genesis chapter 12, God made a promise to Abraham that he would be a great nation, be blessed by God, and be a blessing to all people on the earth. In short, blessed to be a blessing, which of course is the catchphrase title which we have at Belmont this year. And on this wonderful panel on my left-hand side, your right, see at the top we have Abraham and Sarah. And then if you look along the top line, you'll see Joseph there in his wonderful multicolored long-sleeved coat. And the word Joseph means, "May God give more, may he add, or shall he add?" And I think we'll be touching on that later on in the service. There have been many twists and turns along that whole story as we followed it week by week, far too many to recount in detail. But suffice it to say, we have encountered intrigue, trickery, cohabiting, surrogate mothers, deception, fear, hatred, anger, and more besides. Yet despite all that has happened, surely whether we're familiar with the story or not, we have marveled how God's plan has been worked out through those dysfunctional families of Abraham, Isaac, and now we're coming down to Jacob. In Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, I thought that'd be appropriate to quote from that, Lysander utters those memorable words, "The course of true love never did run smooth." And as far as we are concerned, and as far as Genesis is concerned, I think we can say that the course of God's redemption for the world, the course of his plan of salvation, never did run smooth. As I said, there'd be many twists and turns. Indeed, as we'll see tonight as we look at the reading, dreams become nightmares. And again, it looks like God's plan is going to be derailed by violent, by evil men. It's not a smooth course. And as we pick up the storyline, Jacob and his family are in the land of Canaan, the land that was promised by God to Abraham and to which we read about in Genesis 15. Yet in the same chapter, we read that the Lord said to Abraham, you might like to flick back to chapter 15, it's verses 15 and 16, chapter 15, verses 15 and 16. The Lord says to him, "Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in the country, not their own, and they will be enslaved and ill-treated there. And in the fourth generation your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure." So for God's promises to come true, at some point in time, Abraham's descendants have to go to a foreign country and spend 400 years there. It seems a somewhat unlikely scenario, because Jacob and his family are already living in the land of Canaan. So why on earth would they want to up sticks and head south down to Egypt? But as we shall start to see tonight, and as we shall see over the coming weeks, Genesis 37 to the end to chapter 50 deal with the circumstances of how God's promises in that regard begin to be worked out, begin to come true. It is an amazing story, and it makes more than just a good musical. I don't know if you've seen Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It's quite good to the text. I mean, it misses the whole point of the story, but nevertheless, if you have the opportunity, I'd recommend you go and see it. And one other interesting thing about this chapter 37, well, there are many interesting things, but one you might have picked up on, and it's this. God is nowhere mentioned in the chapter. His name isn't there. Not once. Some people make an issue of it, but I don't think we should over-concern ourselves with it and take it to mean that God was absent from all the situations that are recorded here. Simply doesn't make sense to read it like that. God might not be explicitly mentioned, but his involvement in everything that happens is surely implicit. As someone has said, the whole narrative is dominated by the unmistakable theme of God's providence. And when we read the chapter and the subsequent ones with an open mind, surely we will see that. The whole narrative is dominated by the unmistakable theme of God's providence. Now, so you know roughly where we're going tonight, I'm just going to consider the reading under two simple headings. Dreams and nightmares, Joseph and Jesus. I'll say a lot more about the first section in the first section than I will in the second one. I couldn't come up with endless alliteration. I tried, but I gave up. It was giving me nightmares. So dreams and nightmares. When we're introduced to Joseph here in verse 2, he's a young man of 17. He's young, but he's a man. Much has happened in his life. He's had to grow up very fast. To cut a long story short, he was brought up in a family with one father, three mothers. There were four for a while, but Rachel died when she was having Benjamin, that's Joseph's mother. There were 10 older brothers, one elder sister that we know of, and a younger brother. What is more, by the time Joseph is 17, some of his brothers have blood on their hands. We read about that in the previous chapter, or previous chapters. And one has slept with one of Jacob's wives, Bilhah. There's been incest in the family. In such a family, Joseph would undoubtedly have had to grow up very quickly. I think we can hardly imagine what mealtimes must have been like in that dysfunctional family. To complicate matters even more, Joseph was Jacob's favorite son, and he made no secret of it. In addition, he gave Joseph a richly ornamented robe. I'm no Hebrew scholar, and I wouldn't pretend to be, but I can read books like you can. And it seems it wasn't so much a multicolored robe, but one that had long sleeves and one that reached down to the ground. And we have it right here, which is great, long sleeves and right down to the ground. Because when his brothers would be working, they would have short sleeves and short tunics on them. So it marked them out as being different from the others. They hated him for it. If that were not enough, then as we've read, Joseph had two dreams. One about sheaves bowing down to his sheaf, one about the sun, moon, and stars bowing down to him. Now, I don't think it takes a mystic Meg or a Sigmund Freud to interpret those dreams. The brothers and the father knew well what they meant, what the significance of them were. They were jealous of him. Albeit that it's not actually stated here, it does seem the brothers knew the dreams were special and given by God. They were not just the wishful thinking of a youngster, of an upstart, of a younger brother. The dreams, though, gnawed away at them. We'll see a little more about that later. But that's the way it is, isn't it, often with truth? It has a habit of doing that. We can try and suppress it, but more often than not, it won't go away. It'll keep coming back to hound us, as it were, to speak to us. Then one day the brothers' hatred, jealousy, and anger simmered over. Joseph had been sent by his father to check out what his other brothers were doing. We can understand when we discover what happened before. But when they saw Joseph coming, they said, verse 19, "Here comes the dreamer. Come now, let's kill him. Throw him into the cisterns and say the ferocious animal devoured him. Then we will see what comes of his dreams." Reuben then suggested a different plan that was brought into action. So they stripped Joseph of his robe and put him into the cistern, which was dry. Then we read the brothers sat down and had a meal, as one does after an activity like that. What a family they were. And then a caravan of traders, Ishmaelites or Midianites, I think the terms overlap or interchangeable, there's no contradiction here, come by, and Judah has an idea. And so Joseph goes off down to Egypt for 20 pieces of silver he is sold on. The brothers dip Joseph's robe in blood of a goat, take it back to the old man and say, "Oh, look, what do you think of this?" And he jumps to the conclusion, well, he's being devoured, he's being killed by a ferocious animal. How ironic. Jacob, the man who tricked his father Isaac many years earlier by killing a couple of goats and putting the skin on his hands and his arms, is now the one who is deceived by means of a goat being killed. The words of Isaiah 3:11 and Galatians 6 are surely pertinent. "Woe to the wicked, disaster is upon them. They will be paid back for what their hands have done. And people reap what they sow." And it just so happens that when Joseph goes down to Egypt with these traders, he is sold to one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. To say the least, what happened to Joseph must have been a complete nightmare for him. Life didn't turn out the way he expected it to. I've little doubt that he thought it would be all plain sailing, and one day the brothers and the dad even would come and bow down before him. He mightn't have actually worked out how that would happen. Well, that would have been, well, it was literally his dream. Well, it was God's dream given to him. But I'm sure he pondered that at times. He thought, well, life's going to be easy. Dad loves me. All going swimmingly. But the possibility of his dreams coming true seems to have disappeared. Yet from our viewpoint, we can see the providence of God, the hand of God, is over all the story. It just happened that when Joseph was at Shechem, a man met him in the field. And it just happened that that man had overheard the brothers say, "Oh, let's go on up to Dothan." It just happened that the cistern into which Joseph was thrown was dry. It just happened that a caravan of Ishmaelites on their way to Egypt came by. And it just happened that they were prepared to take a risk, to take a punt, to buy him, and then hopefully to sell them on at a profit once they got down to Egypt. And it just happened that when Joseph was down in Egypt, the traders sold them on to the guard, to Pharaoh's official. It just happened. Really? I don't think so. If Joseph had not met the man in the field when he did, he might have turned round and gone home, because it was another about 15, 20 miles further north, and he'd already travelled quite a long way. And if the cistern into which he was thrown was wet, he would have drowned very quickly. And if the Ishmaelites were heading north rather than south, Joseph would never have ended up in Egypt. And if the Ishmaelites were not prepared to take a punt on buying him and selling him and take him down to Egypt, he would never have gone there. And if Joseph hadn't been sold to the captain of the guard, the story that follows would have been very different. I think we know it, but I'm not going to spoil it for you. The point is, what happened to Joseph did not happen by chance. Despite the seeming randomness of each event, along with the evil intent and actions of men, God was working his ultimate purpose out. As Liam Gallagher has said, we are not the victims of luck, fate, or karma. Rather, God has mapped out our path from before time began. He is active in the circumstances, surprise and choices of our lives, and is all the time leading us towards his purpose. I do apologize. I should have got these up on PowerPoint, but I didn't. So let me repeat that. We are not the victims of luck, fate, or karma. Rather, God has mapped out our path from before time began. He is active in the circumstances and choices of our lives and is all the time leading us towards his purposes. But because we are human beings, we will undoubtedly wonder at times what is happening in our lives and where is God in it all. At times, events, circumstances, things that happen that come our way will seem so random and so not in keeping with what we had imagined. Illness, injury, bereavement, loss of job, loss of a partner, breakup of a relationship, something we had hoped for didn't come true. All sorts of things we never dreamt of will come our way. I was very moved to hear Mike. Thank you, Mike, for that earlier on and the way you described what happened. You used a very interesting little phrase at one time. Wrote it down here. Pain, it changes your outlook on life. And it certainly does. But it has well been said that life is like a jigsaw puzzle. Hundreds, thousands of little individual pieces make up the whole picture. Yet when we are born, we don't see the beautiful picture that's on the top of the box. We just see the little bits of pieces, and they all seem, as I said, very random. Although we might well not see it at the time, guided by God's good hand, each incident, each piece is linked to make up the whole picture of our life. And one day that picture will be complete. The final picture is known to the Maker, to our Creator. It's only a puzzle to us because we can't see it, generally. So when life doesn't turn out as we expected it to, when our hopes are dashed, when we are confused and perplexed, when all is dark and life doesn't seem to be making sense, let us not give up in despair. Instead, let us trust in our Creator and Redeemer, because He knows the end from the beginning. He sees the full picture. Years later, and I'm jumping out of the chapter here, I feel I have to at times, Joseph could say to his brothers, this was quoted at the start of the services, Genesis 50, verse 20, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." And as far as we are concerned, sometimes we will see the reason why things happen, but I think more often than not, we might not understand why things happen to us. But as long as we live, let us trust God, even when we don't understand what is going on around us. And let us cling to the truth of what it says in Romans 8:28. In all things, not in some things, but in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. There's one other aspect which we see in the life of Joseph, which I'd like to draw to your attention, has already been touched on earlier, which is great. But it's this. Before he went on to become a great blessing to others, Joseph had to face personal pain and loss. And boy, did he face that for many years. But what a blessing he became. Again, just going back to what Mike said, it's lovely, isn't it? I know it's very difficult. I'm sure it is difficult for Mike. But the way he talked about being a blessing to the people, that group are in the hospital, he could be a blessing to others. God was still using him in a special way, which he wouldn't have been used in before all his troubles came along. It's not an invariable rule that God will always operate in our lives like that. We have to go through tremendous suffering and pain before we can be a blessing to others. But more often than not, that seems to be God's general pattern. A.W. Tozer, I think he put it somewhat bluntly, yet plainly, when he said, "It is doubtful that God ever uses anyone greatly without first hurting them deeply." It's doubtful that God ever uses anyone greatly without first hurting them deeply. I think Charles Haddon Spurgeon put it more gently. I prefer this. He said, "Your emptiness is but the preparation for your being filled, and your casting down is but the making ready for your lifting up." Isn't that lovely? Your emptiness is but the preparation for your being filled, and your casting down is but the making ready for your lifting up. God uses the hard times in our lives to shape us, to mold us, to fit us for greater service for Him. His purpose is not to harm us by them, but to develop us in and through them. As a matter of fact, when we stop and think about it, He is blessing us by sending those things our way. They are for our ultimate good and for His ultimate glory. So when difficult times come our way, as they surely will, let us not resent them and kick against them. Rather, let us learn in and from them so that we can go on to be a greater blessing to others. Now, just a few brief comments. I said this section is going to be much shorter than the first, and it will. A few comments on Jesus and Joseph. But first, we're going to jump to Luke's Gospel 24 and 27. It's the account of where Jesus is walking along the road to Emmaus with his disciples. Luke records that Jesus said, "Beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Wouldn't you have loved to know more? Wouldn't you love to know more about that conversation? I would. I wish it was written down. I wonder how long it lasted and what was said. But when we look at Joseph's life, we can see in many aspects of it a type, a foreshadowing, a prefiguring of the life of Jesus, or a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. Consider the following, and I'm only confining myself to today's reading. Joseph was the especially loved son of his father. When Jesus was baptized, a voice from heaven said, "This is my son whom I love, with whom I am well pleased." Joseph was the chosen one. Sorry, Mourinho, someone else had that title. And on the mountain of transfiguration, a voice came from the clouds saying, "This is my son whom I have chosen." Joseph was hated by his brothers because he brought an evil report about them. Jesus was hated by the world at large. He said, "The world hates me because I testify that its works are evil." Joseph was sold for pieces of silver. Jesus was sold by Judas for 30 pieces of silver. Joseph was stripped of his robe. When Jesus was crucified, they took off his clothes. Joseph's brother thought they had seen the end of him. When Jesus was crucified, the authorities made his tomb more secure than usual to make sure they had got rid of him. But how wrong they were. And we'll see that in the coming weeks. It's fascinating, actually, to read the whole story. If you have time, could I recommend you do that? Read from 37 to 50, ideally before next week, but over the coming weeks, so you get the whole flow of what's happening. And you'll see in it, have a look as you read through for these foreshadowings, for these pictures of Jesus. And finally, as I mentioned right at the start, the story of Joseph is part of God's plan of redemption for the whole world. And again, over the coming weeks, we'll see how that develops and unfolds with particular reference to the Israelites and there down in Egypt. But of course, the whole biblical story of redemption finds its greatest expression in the one to whom Joseph points, the Lord Jesus Christ. He is the one who can rescue us from whatever pit we are in. He is the one who can lift us up and give us new life. He is the one who can transform our lives from despair to hope. He is the one who can accomplish in and through us more than we can ever ask or think or dream of. And he is the one who can bless us so that we can be a blessing to others. So may God, in his grace and his mercy, enable each one of us here this evening to have a true, a living faith in him, to be blessed by him, to trust him in all the circumstances of life, and to be a blessing to others. Amen.